What is up, everybody? Thank you for checking out the Pat Out of Hell podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Christopher. Today, I'm joined by Albert Gonzalez, artist. You can find him at Trebler Art on Instagram. But where else can they find you? You have a website, anything like that?
Yeah, website is albertgonzalezart.com. That's Gonzalez with an S.
Yeah. Cool, man. Thanks for coming out. You're a different guest sometimes. I want to bring different creative people, but we did meet at the comedy club. Yeah. You were pursuing, or not pursuing, I guess that's the wrong word, but you signed up to do the open mics and stuff.
Yeah.
So let's touch on that a little bit. What made you take a break from painting and creating, you know, the visual arts to get on stage and actually try comedy at the open mics?
Dude, honestly, like, low-key, like, art is helping me pursue the stuff that I want to do eventually. Yeah. In comedy, like, it allows me to, you know, have a lot of free time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I'm always writing. I'm always either writing stories or writing jokes. My wife, she does not have the same sense of humor.
Yeah.
that I have. And art is, you know, obviously very creative, right? And there's a lot of times when, especially going to art events, mm-hmm. and a whole bunch of different type of functions, always leaving with stories and all these crazy things. And I don't really have an outlet to
share
these,
yeah,
opinions or share these thoughts. And years ago, I think maybe 2012, is when I first went on stage for the first time at a open mic.
Oh, really?
Laugh Out Loud.
Okay.
And I had one of my buddies, Andre, come with me because I was so nervous. And I went up, you know, I ate shit, but I remember getting up there and feeling so happy, so not confident, but just the ability to just...
I survived.
Yeah. Survive and just say whatever was on my mind at that time. And now, you know, I think when we met, it was a lot more refined from that first time, because I kind of at least had an idea of a structure. Because, mm-hmm. you know, since then, I had watched a lot of comedy and gone to, you know, performances when I could. And
your first time, did you have anything planned or written out?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Uh-huh.
I did. It was about dating. Oh, at the time, I was working at Home Depot.
Uh-huh.
And it was about dating older women that I met at Home Depot.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny. I had some small laughs.
Yeah.
But I love doing it. I want to do it more. And, you know, what I was saying about, like, the art helping me pursue some of my comedy is, you know, again, writing. I've been working on learning how to do videography, cinematography.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So along with the writing is, like, skits and, you know, just, like, funny shit that I want to do.
Yeah.
And the art has allowed me to get these tools so that when I'm, you know, ready to, you know, have the production, mm-hmm. to make these things, I'm able to. And
yeah,
just a lot of anxiety and preparation that I don't think I'm ready for, but, you know.
What are the things besides comedy and painting, like, were you into music? Did you do bands, or did you do, like, rap or anything?
Oh, dude,
like that?
I did a lot of rap.
Yeah.
A lot of rap. In high school, me and my buddies, we would, you know.
So you started, like, looking for something artistically to do, so a way to perform or all that stuff.
Yeah.
So what was the rap stuff like?
Dude, it was just a lot of, you know, Texas-style freestyles, you know.
Yeah.
In the lunchroom, I had a friend that would... called Cheddar Bob, who would beatbox in the circle, and me and my friends, we would all freestyle. And in high school, I was pretty notorious for throwing, like, big house parties.
Really?
And we would have, like, the PA system, and occasionally would get the mics and throw on an instrumental, and me and my friends would, like, freestyle at house parties.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of got, like, a little reputation for just freestyling all the time. Mm-hmm. And was able to, you know, see a lot of my friends who continued their music paths, you know, mm-hmm. do some really cool stuff and continue to do, like, really great things in music
for
the city. So now I'm just, you know, doing another route.
Yeah.
I love music, but I don't think my strong point was rap. It was something I just...
So what other things did you try? Did you try, like, acting or, like... you said you're getting into, videography and photography and stuff. Did you try that before?
In high school, I auditioned for a part in a school play. I got it, but then I wasn't able to be in the play because I had other commitments for, like, basketball and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So I tried to do, like, a lot of stuff.
What was the play? What was the role?
It was a comedic role. It was a guy who was, like, really broke and wore a potato bag. I forgot exactly what the role was, but it was, like, a comedic role.
Yeah.
And, like, I was supposed to wear this, like, potato bag as, like, an article of clothing and, like, say some funny stuff. And,
yeah.
But I never did it. But I remember auditioning and just kind of having my fingers crossed, hoping that I got the part, because I didn't want a main role. I just wanted something that was just, like, you know, satirical and kind of funny. And I just didn't do it.
That was the only time you pursued that, the theater acting, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, I just wasn't really feeling it. I just wanted to get it, but I didn't want to actually do it.
I wanted to do it. It's just at the time I was in high school, so I had, like, all these other things. Like, I was so into basketball in high school, so it was, like, basketball first. And now looking back, like, I didn't – we lost and got our ass whooped. So I was like, yeah, I could have just, you know, took that weekend off. And, and, you know.
It didn't matter as much.
Bro. Yeah, it didn't matter that much.
I could have been potato guy.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. So, like, in high school, you, like, when did you start painting? Like, actually, like, when did you discover that?
That was in 2014. So, like, growing up, I was always considered, like, creative.
Yeah.
I always wanted to doodle. I was always doodling.
In 2014, that's after high school?
After high school. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, leading up from, like, as a kid until, you know, a kid in high school, this and that, I was always just doodling. But it wasn't until 2014 where it's like, okay, I want to paint. I want to, you know, create something of value. I want to create something for people to be proud of and have in their home.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just, like, a whole nother learning curve because, you know, I didn't know how to really use a paintbrush. I didn't know, you know, what type of materials to paint on, and didn't know how to sell art and how to market that or how to market myself.
Yeah.
And
so how do you start, like, what's the open mic for painting? Like, how do you start into that?
To start into painting, the one thing I always would suggest people, because right away a lot of artists is like, oh, I want to go into a gallery. I want to have a gallery.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, like, we can mentally think we're ready, but a lot of times it's like you want to, just like, you know, kind of comedy, you want to do the open mics. You want to, you know, eat shit. You want to, you know, have those learning experiences. You just don't want to get a paid gig and mess up. So what I tell artists is, like, go, there's so many free art events going on in the city. You know, some places offer free vending, some places offer, you know, very minimal, like $10-$25 to vend. You know, I tell them, build a small body of work, do as many of these vending opportunities as you can, but also be very specific. So, like, you know, if you're painting, you know, portraits of people, like, really think about that market, like, like, what kind of market buys portraits? Like, it's kind of all over the place. But if you want to do portraits, you know, you're in San Antonio, paint a portrait of Selena, probably sell fast. Go to an event, you know, test out the market, learn, and do your own research on, you know, your own business or your own technique or whatever. So do as many vending opportunities as you can early on to test your market, and also test your prices. Because, you know, I've seen some people that are, like, off the bat, you know, probably haven't sold many pieces at all. And they're like, that's $3,000. Okay, you know, that's cool. I'm sure you can sell it. You just got to know your market. But if you're just putting $3,000 on it just to put $3,000 on it, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes behind that $3,000. If someone asks you, oh, why are you selling that for $3,000? Oh, because I just want $3,000 for it. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
If you have the history of kind of building up to that $3,000, then you have something that can solidify, like, your place in that market, you know? So I just tell artists, do vending, learn your market, learn, you know, your capabilities as far as, like, marketing yourself, and just do as much of that as you can. Fail a lot. Like, you know, if you haven't had a opportunity to set up at a vending place and not sell anything at all, like, sometimes you gotta have some of those experiences just to, like, humble you and kind of really understand, like, maybe you didn't sell yourself. Maybe you just weren't talking enough. You know, maybe you just didn't, maybe you didn't ask the right questions.
Yeah.
You know, back when I started out, I was in the streets. Like, I was across the street from the Alamo just because I knew if anyone came to San Antonio and they were staying downtown, they were from out of town.
The tourists,
they had money to be there. And, you know, they had some sort of money to spend, right? So back then, you could find me on the street. And probably if you were to see me and you would have been like, hey, man, I like that. I would have been like, how much are you willing to pay for it?
Oh, yeah? You would give it to them? Like, donations, or you give me the price.
Yeah. And
yeah, because it is tough to put a price on something because, okay, you want them to take it. You want them to enjoy it. But you don't want them to reject, you know, whatever price. Mm-hmm. And they, like, a lot of people don't like paying for stuff. They want stuff for free.
Especially in San Antonio.
Yes, dude. And just, like, they're like, no, I liked it. I like it. I want to take it. But, yeah, but, like, what am I going to get out of it, you know? So it is tough. So I understand, like, the whole, like, how were those, like, what kind of offers did you get when you said you named the price?
Shit. I remember one time. Someone told me, like, oh, I'll give you $5. I remember being so offended, but then I remember thinking, like, I asked him.
Like, but, like, for what are we talking about? Like, how big is a piece? It was
pretty, like, maybe it's like an 18 by 24.
Oh,
and wow. At that time, I was thinking at least, like 25, $50.
At least.
And then he's like, oh, like $5. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, I asked him the question, like,
it is rough too, because, like, you're like, oh man, $5, that's insulting. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to tell him no. Well, because, like, you did tell him, like, okay, well, you start the bidding.
One thing I'll never forget, like, on the opposite end, was I was set up at Vivo Taco Land back before it was this, like, Velvet Taco, which I'll never step foot in and eat a taco.
Oh,
there.
Really?
Oh. But back when it was Taco Land and before it was all, you know, lit up and nice, like, I was there back when it was, like, not so nice at all.
Yeah.
And I remember setting up, having this, like, large painting. It's, like, 4 feet by 4 feet. And it was a really good abstract piece of mine. And this guy, you know, dressed up, you know, looked like a realtor who just got out of, like, a showing or something. And he was with this lady. And he comes up to me and I'm working on this painting. And he goes, oh, how much is that painting? I was like, oh, $100. And he's like, this face that he made of, like, damn, like, he looked upset because he really was interested in this painting. And I told him $100. And he was like, man, he's like, if you would have told me $1,000, I would have bought it.
Wow, dude.
And I was like, I meant $1,000. And he was like, yeah, dude. Like, he kind of laughed and he was like, I don't buy any art under $1,000. And he's like, it's just like a part, like, of how he collected art. And I'm not sure if it was true or not.
Yeah.
But, you know, he might have just been talking shit. But
what do you think that mentality is, though? Like, he wants the artist to have that much, not respect, but, like.
Well, the way he told me was, like, I didn't value my work enough. And he's like, this, I would have paid $1,000 for this.
See, and that's rough because there's a lot of people that would say $100, all right. You know, like, oh, that's a lot of money for this thing. Even though it is a lot of work, it's a lot of time. And that's what you're paying for. You're paying for the time, the effort, and the art on top of that, too. So, I mean, like, but yeah, the $1,000, and he's like, well, you know, if you don't value it, why am I going to?
And that's exactly what he said. He said, you know, I would have paid $1,000 for this.
But that's also very rare. A lot of people don't think like that.
Yeah.
You know?
But it also gave me this idea of, like, because at that time I hadn't had a solo art show yet. And, you know, even at that time, you know, I was still kind of doing it, like, oh, what would you pay for it? Or, you know, really negotiating a lot on my work back then. But having that experience for me was just like this sign of, like, I got to start valuing myself.
Yeah. More,
because if I keep doing this, like, I'm going to miss opportunities like that.
Like,
you know, like now, for instance, like, people tell me, ask me, you know, oh, how much is that painting? Like, I tell them the price. Like, this is what it's worth. Like, I don't negotiate as far as like, oh, you know, like, I really want you to have it.
You don't list the price on the pieces?
Not a lot.
So no. They have to ask you. Mm-hmm. What's the mentality behind that? Rather than have it posted up, you want them to ask, mm-hmm. so to give you the number. Was that a trial and error thing, or that you've always been like, you ask me and I'll tell you, rather than like, let's set the price here?
It just works in like different settings. Uh-huh. So like, if there's going to be like a lot of people in an area, like my studio, for instance, sometimes, like, you know, there's a lot of people there wanting to just look, mm-hmm. and then you have a lot of people that are like really interested in collecting. So I feel it's also a great opportunity to have that conversation.
Okay.
But a lot of times, you know, you know, you can go shopping for cars or whatever. You're going to look around and you see the price and you're just, okay, and keep walking. But imagine if those price tags weren't there, right?
I see.
You see the car that you really want.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, okay, like, how much is this car? And then that salesperson is not just going to tell you the price.
Yeah.
He's going to tell you everything that car has and why it's that price. Mm-hmm. So for paintings, you know, I just don't tell them the price and give them proper introduction. Tell them a little bit like what I've been doing in my career, how mm-hmm. I got to where I'm at, and then get to the price.
Yeah.
Because it's like, this is what you're paying for. Like, you're paying for all this work that's been put in to get to, mm-hmm. to this price. And sometimes, you know, it works.
Yeah.
Just putting the price, because some people will see it and be like, you know, probably not right now.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get people that's like, I want that.
Yeah. So we've only met, like, I've only known of you for about 5 months, maybe something mm-hmm. like that. But since I started following you on Instagram, it seems like a lot of stuff has taken off. You know, like, I think you said on your podcast that you had an installation done at UTSA.
Mm-hmm.
Was that true?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, so what does that mean, or what did that mean? Because is it still running thing, or was it a?
Yeah. So UTSA bought some of my work,
uh-huh.
and recently they hung a show, or curated a show, over at the Texas Center for Culture,
uh-huh.
Downtown, uh-huh. by the Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And they selected my painting along with like 11 other, like, internationally known artists.
Okay.
And my painting's in this, like, just a huge show. And it's just kind of, it's still right now, even just thinking that I'm included in a show like that, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And
was that, like, the first, like, big thing that's happened?
No, the really first really big show that I was a part of that just blew my mind was a show called Voz, which was another show curated by UTSA,
mm-hmm.
and what they did was they selected 65 artists from their permanent collection, and they curated it at the Centro de Artes downtown at mm-hmm. the Market Square,
mm-hmm.
and all the artists that I was featured with were, you know, are artists that I look up to, and,
yeah,
you know, idolize, and that was, you know, 2018,
mm-hmm.
so I was still like super early into my career, so to be included in a show like that back then, like, it was a huge, like, is a huge accomplishment for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had this cool story tied to that building, because back when I was just starting out, like, I would stand in front of that building with my paintings during like Fiesta, and like hoping people would just like acknowledge what I was doing or what I was creating. And then, you know, fast forward, you know, I was in that same building showcasing my art with like the people that I look up to.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you born and raised in San Antonio?
Mm-hmm. South side and west side.
South side and west side?
Yeah.
Where'd you graduate?
Lanier.
So to see things like happen, take off in San Antonio, like, after, like, it kind of hits different, right? Like, mm-hmm. rather than like, okay, well, it's being shown in Austin or California, New York. I mean, even though those are big things,
yeah.
like, you still want the hometown kind of like, yeah, like validation type of thing.
Yeah,
right, man. That's awesome, dude. So that's all pretty new. How was the start of this? Like, how was the beginning?
It was like some of the roughest shit I ever been through, man. Very humbling.
Yeah,
that, like, didn't really have much, you know, support from people. A lot of people were just like, oh, just get a job. You know, yeah. do that on the side. That's good gas money.
Yeah.
You
know,
you know, selling.
That's
that
cute.
Stuff.
That's fun. But yeah. What are you gonna do for real?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. It's tough. Well, when do you graduate? Like, how old are you?
I'm 32.
32. So still young, dude.
Yeah.
Still young. But yeah, like you kind of have that thing like you don't feel supported, even though they're just concerned, worried. Yeah. Like, no, like this is good. I'm glad you have this, but like, really, what are you gonna do?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like, but like when you get hurt, like, you know, are you gonna go to the doctor?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, like, you know, I gotta get, you know, insurance and
how you gonna pay for like the medical
that.
Bills? You
yeah.
know,
yeah. So, like, even now, you know, being able to do the things that I do, like, I still sit there sometimes in my studio and just think, like, damn, like, I'm paying all these bills, but being able to do that through my art. Like, again, it's just I just want to inspire other people, whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, any field that they're doing, it's just like it can be done. It just takes like the sacrifice.
Yeah.
To make it happen, because it's a shitload of work. And
how long do you think that struggle lasts before you start saying like, OK, I'm on the right path?
I'd say for me, like a whole year.
Year.
Maybe like a whole year and a couple months, because. Yeah, I was barely getting by with like paying the bills that I was starting to have
mm-hmm.
Towards the end of that first year. But, you know, I just kept figuring it out. It's like, oh man, I barely had enough to eat after paying rent.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, okay, like every time I paid rent, it was like, okay, I gotta make a little bit more next time so I could, you know, eat better
yeah.
and stuff like that. And that's what all it was just readjusting my goals as I started to hit. You know, my goals was just like readjusting and
mm-hmm.
coming up with a more evolved game plan of mm-hmm. how to hit these new goals.
Yeah. You have this thing that the I don't want to mess it up. The what do you call it? The weeby?
Oh, wabi-sabi.
Wabi-sabi. All right. Sorry. Man, I was really trying. I wanted close. To say that. I wanted like to pull it off. Like, wabi-sabi. Like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. But I'm really dumb with words. And then we were talking about earlier, like, I'm like, we lost an hour. And I'm kind of hungover from edibles. So I'm not at 100%. But that's the one thing I could fuck up your name. I could fuck up your Instagram. But I wanted to get the wabi-sabi right. Because like, oh yeah, he fucking knows. Oh, fuck. Anyway.
Weeby-CB.
Yeah.
That's funny.
The sabi wabi blah blah. But so, okay. So what is it?
Wabi-sabi, it's a Japanese philosophy.
Uh-huh.
Which is about embracing the beauty in the imperfect.
Okay. But isn't that what you call like the kind of art?
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
series. Okay,
yeah.
So your series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah. You have several different series like that, or is that like your main
so,
thing?
Yeah. So the Wabi Sabi series are like my flower painting.
Yeah.
And I do other stuff too. Like I do some abstract stuff. I do some figurative.
Oh, okay,
stuff.
Okay.
But my Wabi Sabi series is probably just like my most
trademark, like, not most notable.
Yeah.
Notable type.
Yeah.
Of thing. Yeah.
And what I like to say is it allows me to do. Other stuff.
So yeah.
Like, it allows me to work on my abstract paintings. It allows me to go do stand-up comedy,
yeah.
You know, being able to do that series and have people collect it and buy it allows me to have some free time and do the other stuff that I love to do as well.
When did you discover that? Like, when did you find, like, oh, this is a series that – when did that series start? How did that series start?
That started in 2016. So in – early 2016, I had sold...
Like your hat that you're wearing, that's the Wabi Sabi?
Yeah, that's my Wabi Sabi hat.
Okay,
so
yeah, yeah.
It's going to be coming out soon, so make sure y'all...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So in 2015, or I'm sorry, early 2016, I got my first studio. And then just about a month or two after I got my first studio, the president of UTSA at the time, Dr. Ricardo Romo, walked into my studio. And he bought 5 large abstract paintings for UTSA. And for the first time in my life, I was able to cash a check, pay rent, pay
nice.
Bills, and
nice.
have some money left over to do stuff that I wanted to do. And, you know, I didn't go to art school, but...
Nothing.
No.
Self-taught everything.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And so one thing that I wanted to do with that money is because I was always seeing these masterpieces... Of art online or in books, I told myself, like, I wanted to now that I have this money, I want to go see these pieces in person. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. So as soon as I cashed that check, paid my bills.
I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
I booked a trip to Philadelphia to go to the Barnes Foundation, which is an amazing art foundation, amazing collection of art. I seen, you know, the master's works in there. And then from there, I took the train to New York. And while in New York, I went to the MoMA and the Met, seen some more masterpieces that, like, inspired me. And then my last day, I'll tell this story. So my last day in New York City, me and my wife were riding our these, like, bikes through Soho. And we pull up to a stop sign. And I see this guy in all New York gear, New York hat, New York jacket, walk across the street in front of me. And I look at my wife and I'm like, that's fucking Spike Lee.
Yeah.
And I throw my bike to the ground and I run up to him. And the last day in Philadelphia, I had went to the Mitchell & Ness store and they had dropped, like, you know, those vintage Spurs warm-up jackets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
My last day in Philadelphia, Mitchell & Ness had dropped that merch that morning.
Really?
And I bought, like, all the Spurs gear that they dropped. And the way it works with the Mitchell & Ness headquarters is they drop it there at the headquarters, and then 3 months after that, like, all the U.S. stores get it. So I had Spurs gear that people weren't going to have in 3 months. So anyway, I'm rocking that shit in New York. And I
did go, you just so happen upon that, or you, like, knew about it? No, I just so
happened upon it.
Wow.
Like, so, yeah.
I love that shit.
So I'm rocking all that stuff in New York.
Yeah.
I see Spike Lee, and I go up to him, and he turns around, and he's like, are you from San Antonio?
So I was how, like, do you know?
So I have all my Spurs gear. I have this photo on my Instagram of me and him. He's in his New York stuff. I'm in my Spurs stuff.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, I was just starting off in my career, and I was telling, I was just like a little fangirl, because I'm like,
yeah,
you know, I'm here on this trip. You know, I came to get inspired, this and that. And I'm like, I'm meeting freaking New York legend. Like this is even more inspiring. And
yeah.
I told him, I was like, one day I want to be like you for San Antonio. Like I want to be like on that level one day, like creatively, where people, you know, just tie me to my city like that. And he's like,
they know that name. Everybody knows that name.
Yeah. And he's like, okay, dude. Like, you know, let's take this picture. And he kept going. And
what sucks is that, like, that encounter means so much to you, but he gets that all the time. Well,
check this out. So check this out. It gets crazy. So last night or last day in New York, I fly back. That night, I have a dream that inspired the Wabi Sabi series. I have this dream of these colors floating down from the ceiling of my studio. I wake up that next morning. I draw that on a napkin while me and my wife are having breakfast. And I tell her, I got to paint this today. So we finish breakfast. I go to the studio. I buy the same size canvas I saw in my dream. Buy all the colors I saw in my dream. And I go and I paint that painting that I saw in my dream. And that was the very first one of the series that has literally changed my life.
Wow, dude. So,
fast forward to this past June last year, I'm in New York City on this, like, paid for trip. I'm a creative director for this one project, and they fly me out there, and, you know, I'm doing, like, work stuff with my art. And my last day in New York City, I had this idea. I had packed a painting with me. I took a 16x20 painting of my Wabi Sabi series, and as I was packing it, my wife was like, what are you taking that for? You're gonna sell it?
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, New York City, you just never know what the hell's gonna happen in New York. So I was like, I want to take this because you just never know. My last day in New York City, we're staying in Brooklyn. I have this canvas, and I called my wife on the phone that morning, and I told her, have you been in New York?
Yeah.
You know how crazy, how almost impossible it is to just talk to random strangers?
Yeah.
So I had this painting with me, and I called my wife in the morning, and I said, I have something crazy. I'm going to take this painting. I'm going to go up to random strangers in Brooklyn, and I'm just going to tell them my story, tell them about the Wabi Sabi series, and then I'm going to photograph them. And
you're going up to random people?
Yeah. And I told her, I was like, I'm going to go up to random people, do that.
In Brooklyn, you said?
In Brooklyn.
Okay, okay.
And I said, I'm going to take pictures of them just to prove that, like, I talked to these people, right?
Okay.
So I start my little adventure, and I told my wife, with the painting, obviously they're going to trade it, sell it, or give it away. right? So I start my little adventure. I'm going up to people in Brooklyn. I'm talking to a whole bunch of people. Some of them, you know, don't give me the time of day, but there are some people that give me the time of day, and I have these great conversations. I photograph them with my work, and I go up to this area at this park, and there's like this jazz festival going on, and I'm standing next to this one guy, and he sees my painting, and he's like, "Hey, man, like, you know, I like that painting. Tell me about it." So he turns out to be one of the event coordinators for Brooklyn Center of the Arts, and he was putting on that event. So he hears my story, and he's like, "Dude, you want to say that on stage?" And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, tell your story on stage when the band's over. Like, you know, there's an audience." So the band plays. They get off. I get on. I have my painting, and I'm telling the story about, like, you know, how I got started and the Wabi Sabi series, and network with all these people there all within, like, 30, 40 minutes. So I get off stage. I'm on this, like, natural high. And I'm like, man, this is crazy. Like, this is New York for you, right? So I walk down a couple of blocks, and I see this street jazz band just kind of just playing on the street corner. And I'm just, like, watching them, enjoying the music. And a corner of my eye, see this dude, all New York stuff, turn the corner across the street, and I look over, and I'm like, nah, like, that can't be, right?
Yeah.
So I run across the street, and I almost get hit by a van, and I'm like, Spike Lee. And he turns around, and he's like, oh, hey, you know, what's up? I was like, man, this is crazy. Like, I'm seeing you again. He's like, oh, yeah, no, yeah, no, that's cool. And I was like, no. I was like, no, dude, like, this is crazy because, you know, I met you years ago. I'm not even from Brooklyn. Like, that's even crazier. Like, I'm not even from Brooklyn. This is my, you know, third, fourth time in New York, and I'm running into you in the streets of New York again. Mm-hmm. And I told him the first time I met you, I was just starting off in my career. And, you know, I told you back then that, you know, I was just starting out. I was wanting to be, you know, somewhat on your level one day. And, you know, the night that I went back home from this trip, I started a series that has literally changed my life and career. And I was like, how crazy is it that now I'm in New York being paid to be here? And then before I left, I told my wife I was going to bring a painting with me, because you just never know what could happen in New York. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I was like, I could call her right now, because I told her this morning I was going to have this adventure and that I was either going to trade it, sell it, or give it away. And I was like, I don't think it's a coincidence that we meet again.
That's crazy.
On this day,
yeah,
right here. I was like, it'd be an honor for me to give you this painting. And then he turns around with his, like, mouth, like, open, and he's like, dude, that is a crazy story. He's like, you're right. And he's like, I'd be honored to have that painting in my collection.
Damn.
And he's like, I'd love to continue to tell your story,
yeah,
your art. And we took a picture right in front of a mural that he was actually getting ready to unveil that celebrated, like, the 30th or 40th anniversary of the Do the Right Thing movie.
Wow.
And, like, everything was just right place at the right time. And that was, like, my New York Spike Lee story, dude.
Dude, that is so wild. Not even, like, just, like, the coincidence of that. Like, it's, what are the chances?
I know, dude.
What are the chances, dude?
And I called my wife, like, right after. And, like, I'm not going to lie, I was kind of, like, very emotional.
For sure.
I was just, like, I told her, I was, like, I told you I was going to make this happen.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a, like, maybe. I told her, like, no, like some stuff's going to happen. It can happen. And it will happen. It's just like Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
Like, what can happen will happen. And, like, I made that shit happen.
Yeah. You know?
And it's just crazy to wrap my head around that, because it's like fucking New York City.
Do you do that a lot? Are you a manifester? Like, oh, this is going to happen. I'm going to put it into existence, and then bah, it happens.
I just say, I as cliche as it sounds, I just act from my heart. Like, I just act with that gut feeling. Man, like,
yeah, for sure.
Like, stuff that's I've been able to do that I just think, oh, like, it's the right thing to do, or I'm just gonna do it just because I want to do it.
Yeah.
And good things happen after that.
Like, yeah,
it's crazy, dude. Like, it's kind of crazy to wrap my head around. Some stuff that happened this morning, I'll tell you off air about, like, some stuff that happened today, but like it's crazy, dude. You just treat people the way you want to be treated. Try your best to not be an asshole. Be easy to work with.
Yeah.
And just put good energy out there, dude. And life has this way of just working its way out, dude. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times shit ain't gonna happen the way you want it to happen or when you want it to happen. But as long as you have, like, the perspective mm-hmm. of, like, you know, I'm just gonna keep doing the right thing. I'm gonna, even if I might not be busy, I'm gonna keep looking like I'm busy, because all you need is one person to acknowledge, like, damn, like, that guy's doing shit.
Yeah,
you
know? Dude.
And all you need is one opportunity, man. And that's how I see it. That's how I live it every day. I have this tattoo on my arm. It says, fear regret, not failure.
Wow.
And, like, every day I just live by that. Like, I'd rather fail than just think, oh, I should have done that.
Or yeah, man, that should have, would have, could have type of stuff. Because mm-hmm. that stuff will, like, keep you awake at night. You know, all the regrets.
Yep.
You know? Damn, that's so wild, dude. I want to go back, because you said you were self-taught. I always thought, like, okay, classes, you know, how do you learn? How do you even learn how to put a pen to paper, you know, paint on canvas? Like, how do you learn that stuff, mixing colors, all that stuff? So is there, like, an apprenticeship, or did you, like on YouTube? Like, how'd you get into, like, understanding the fundamentals of it?
YouTube, a lot of books, a lot of asking questions.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people willing to give information away.
Really?
And a lot of times it's finding the people that are successful at the place where you want to be one day
mm-hmm.
and asking them all the questions that you can.
Yeah.
And not being afraid to ask questions. Like, even now, you know, I try my best to surround myself with people that are more successful than me and more smarter than me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes I do feel dumb, because, like, you know, especially when people use words that I don't know, like, I'm not afraid to ask, like, what does that mean?
Really?
You know? Yeah, because I feel like if you fake, like, you know stuff, like, you're not learning, you know?
No, for sure. I mean, I fake like I know everything. I, like, when people talk about stuff, I was like, yeah. But I'm so afraid to ask questions to reveal how dumb I am. And I'm just like, no, I'm with this. I understand completely everything you're saying. Yeah, and of course, I don't learn anything by that way. But also, I don't embarrass myself.
Yeah, well, for me, like, I feel like sometimes it's kind of embarrassing, because sometimes I feel like, oh, I should know this.
Yeah. But
at the same time, I also feel comfortable, because it's like, well, I'm rather ask this guy or this person, because it's like,
yeah,
you know, they're taking the time to, you know, sit with me or have me here at their place or this and that. So it's like, I feel comfortable asking certain people questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've even had an interaction one time where I was at an event, and I was probably in a place where I was thinking, like, wow, like, why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, you know, there were a whole bunch of different circles of people, but I remember having this one conversation, and this one guy used this one word that I forgot what word it was. But anyways, I had asked him, we're in a group conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, what does that word mean? And, like, he was an asshole about it. He was like,
yeah, like, see, that's the thing.
Yeah, and but
because you give people the opportunity to make an ass out of you or like, you know, put a spotlight on your ignorance.
Yeah,
you know, and you don't want to do that.
And he made this, like, gesture, like, oh, like obviously, like, this gesture where it's like, oh, this guy's fucking stupid. Like,
yeah, you know what I
mean? But then everyone else there was like, why didn't you just answer his question? Like,
yeah.
He didn't know, and I was still engaging in the conversation. It was like he said a word that I didn't know,
mm-hmm.
and I asked, and he was an asshole about it. Everyone else was like, man, like, this guy's a fucking asshole. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And someone else told me what the word meant, and everyone else just, like, kind of continued with the conversation, but then kind of, like, low-key, like, shunned that guy out, because he was just...
Because he revealed, asshole. Like, who he is.
Yeah, so you know? I feel like, don't be afraid of assholes. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're going to face them, and I feel like I'd rather, even if I don't know the words, I'd rather just be confident in it.
Yeah.
And, like...
See, my thing, like, that situation was cool. Like, everybody else kind of, like, understood, like, he was the bad guy.
Yeah, they could have easily all just started.
Exactly. Like, that would be my thing. Like, oh, well, he doesn't like this guy? Okay, like, none of us like this guy now. Like, we all think this guy... Like, that's my whole thing. And that probably will never happen.
It could have, but, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it could have. Like, that's my fear. It's like, 100% of the time, it's going to be like that, rather than, like... No, everybody was on my side. Like somebody helped me out, and then we were all cool again. Like, it didn't... Yeah.
Hey, but if that would have happened to me, I would have been more humbled.
Yeah. I, like, oh, do man. People do that? Like, we're like... like if you ask them questions like, oh, well, how do you do that, or how do you make this look like that, dude, are they just like, man, that's like my secret, like my sometimes. Secret recipe, my secret, and like what, like you just got to respect that, like anything, like mm-hmm. like do you have that, like if somebody says, well, how do you do that, like, I wish I could tell you, but I can't tell you. That's
yeah, no, I told one person one thing that I did, and then like they used it a yeah. lot, and then after that I was like, I'm not telling nobody that no more. And
well, I mean, I mean, yeah, you should keep some things to yourself because you want to keep it as authentic, and, yeah. and you want, when people see that, go directly to you and know, like, oh, well, that's your piece.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, can we talk about street stuff? Because you do a lot of street stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So not only do you do paint to canvas, and you do that for sale and for, you know, exhibits and all that stuff, but you also do a lot of street stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. How do you feel when you see something that you put up, and then maybe the next day, a couple of days later, it's like taken down?
Yeah, it's part of the game, man. It's a little upsetting, just because. Well, yeah, it's a little upsetting, but technically, I didn't spend like a whole bunch of time on it.
So okay,
it's not like one of my canvas pieces.
Is there a rush from that? Like, because like you got to do it quick, because you're not supposed to be doing that stuff. Right?
Well, I feel like if I do it, well, I kind of do it quick because I feel like
okay,
I don't know. I feel like. I do it quick, but there's some cases where I take my time because mm-hmm. I don't want to like look too obvious. So I feel like you're better off like kind of just playing it cool.
Yeah.
Like if you're supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And that tends to help me more. And I don't know. I'm still kind of figuring that part out.
Yeah.
I'm going to be really tested with that in the next 2 weeks because I'm going to be doing it in Dallas.
Really?
And I'm not too familiar with Dallas police. So it's going to be interesting.
Do they still like hassle people about that stuff? Because I mean, you see graffiti everywhere.
But, yeah.
Like, I, it was funny. It was like, because I saw something that I thought that I think you did on Ceballos and Alamo on that mm-hmm. burned down building.
Yeah.
Right. And I was gonna like, but it's gone.
Yeah.
Okay. So you knew about that. Okay. But on that same building, there's this guy. I don't even know what his tag is, but like. So he has his name out, and then I guess he was going to go back and do the decorations or like the add-ons to it. But on the bottom it says police came. Mm-hmm. Like I had a dip. I couldn't finish this. This is not what, like my finished project, but police came rather than like.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, dude. So, man, because I think, were you ever into graffiti? Did you ever do that stuff? Mm-hmm. No. So it's just like.
I've drawn up some stuff for like some friends back in the day.
Yeah.
But I didn't do any of that.
Okay. So yeah, because like I would, when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's cool. And then when I saw it wasn't there, I was like, man, I wonder if that bums them out, you know, because but also it's kind of like, if it's there and then gone, you just know, like, well, a limited people got to enjoy that, a limited people notice that. Mm-hmm. And maybe like I automatically knew that was yours. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
That's a cool thing to have. Like a stamp, like a trademark, like a.
Yeah, it's going to become iconic, dude, because especially now with the
yeah,
hats.
Yeah, dude.
Like I'm going to put it everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere in the city, you're going to run into it.
Yeah, dude. That's. And I mean, probably just because I know you and I follow you on IG, we met through comedy, and then I, you know, followed through that. But like, I see your stuff all over the place, pretty much, you know, and I'm just like, man, that's really cool. I wonder if there's like, I mean, there has to be other artists that like have their trademark, like people could call, oh, well, that's a so and so piece, mm-hmm. or that's a so and so. That's cool to have, man. Have you ever like, do you do like scavenger hunts about your things?
I have. I have this thing called like the Trebla Art Drop, and
what's Trebla? What's Trebla Art?
So Trebla is like my. I guess it's my other name.
Okay.
But Trebla stands for Time Resolves Everything But Love Answers. So I turned an acronym.
Oh.
Albert Backwards.
Damn, dude. Damn, I'm so stupid. How did I not see that? Okay.
A lot of people don't see it, dude. And well, there's a joke, a premise that I'm working on, because it's like it became an inside joke between my wife and I, because I would run into people that follow me on IG and they're like, dude, like, love your work, blah blah blah, what does Trebla mean? I'm like, just my name backwards, dude. And like the look of disappointment, dude, on their hearts was just like, and it became like so disheartening, because you know, me and my wife would be out and someone would come up to me and my wife would just be like, it's going to happen. And
yeah.
Sure enough, it would. And one day, you know.
Did you get that from Oprah? Because isn't her thing Harpo or something like that?
I didn't know that. Harpo?
Yeah, her production thing is like, right? Oprah backwards, I think. No? Am I making that up?
I don't know. I didn't know that. Oh, so okay. It's Harpo Productions?
I think so.
Oh, probably. I guess.
Oprah?
I don't know Harpo. Well, subliminally, right?
We maybe. Watched
enough Oprah, we're just like backwards.
And I knew that from a long, because I don't even know if she's still on the air, but I remember, like, you know, at the end of her thing, it would say Harpo. I was like, Harpo. And then it was like, hit me, like, oh, that's Oprah backwards. Damn. And I wrote it down. I don't know how I didn't see it. Man, that's genius, though, man.
Yeah, so I got drunk off of wine one night, and I remember just trying to come up with an acronym, and I couldn't even get past, like, the R's at one point because it was just, like, so stupid.
Yeah.
But when I finally, like, said it in my head, like, it just came to me, and I was like, damn, like, that's way better than my name backwards.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, time resolves everything, but love answers. And so, yeah, I go by Albert, but I also go by Trebla.
Nice, dude. Were you into poetry and stuff? Did you write that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, I do a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything, man. And it all kind of like bleeds into, like, everything else that you do. Mm-hmm. That's a great thing to do, man. What do you, when you start a piece, is it start to finish? Like, or do you, like, touch up a little piece here and then start on something else? Do you...
It's a little bit of everything because at one point, I think at most, I've worked on, like, 12 to 16 pieces at a time.
Really?
Yeah.
How? Like, how do you give what needs to go to this and needs to go to that? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, like, if we were to paint or draw or do anything, it would be start to finish, sort of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, it's just like, oh, here, like, I don't know. It's
well, how do you process. Choose what gives what? Like, do you say, okay, this is going to be this theme, this is going to be this theme? Like, what's the process of doing 12 to 16 pieces at once?
Everything's intuitive, dude. So, like, so when I'm in the studio, anything that I'm working on, I guess a part of, like, this mentality for my process is to push my philosophy is, push myself to the point of uncertainty, and once I get there, try my best to follow through with confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, it allows me to make faster decisions, and it allows me to analyze what I create from that. Mm-hmm. Because through that process, you know, I'm doing shit that I sometimes think isn't going to work, or things that I think are stupid, but I push through it and end up learning so much more along the way. And I was telling my friend Kike, who's an amazing clothing or just designer in general, it's like by making decisions like that gives yourself so much more room to grow and analyze. Because if you're so content with making the right decision all the time, you let's say you do make a mistake or it fails, doesn't give you that much room to learn from. Mm-hmm. So by making these, like, quicker decisions, impulsive, intuitive decisions, gives you a lot more room to analyze and try to figure out, well, why did I do that?
Yeah.
Why does this work? Why doesn't it work?
Yeah.
And as an artist, it's like, I could always do another painting. I could always do another drawing. And again, I'm on number, like, 995 in the series.
Wow, dude.
So it's like, having that mentality has helped get me to where that number is today. Because if I was very critical on the entire process, I'd probably still be back in, like, the 300s.
Yeah. No, for sure. Do you paint in silence or music, or what do you got?
Music, podcasts, comedy, primarily jazz.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of everything.
Jazz makes sense. Yeah, for sure. So, like, with music, you know, a song's never finished, it's just abandoned. Same thing with comedy. A joke's never done, it's just, you know, abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever, like, finish a piece, sell it, you know, give it away, or just, like, stop touching it, and then you see, like, oh, I could have done this, or I could have added that, I could have went this way, or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Do you have that, too, or do you just, like, when it's done, moving on?
Again, a little bit of both. Like, yeah. It's done, but then thankfully, you know, I'm able to, like, catalog and archive, like, my stuff. And it's like, I'll revisit the images, and I'll be like, oh, like, I like that decision that I made. again, not sure why he did it, but let me try to not recreate it, but let me try to put myself in the same mindset where I could kind of continue to play off of whatever I was thinking of at that time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've been able to do so many different things. I just feel like just the ability to like fuck up and make mistakes is what I thrive off of because, you know, I got it tattooed on my arm. So it's like, man, just fail. I try to fail as much as I can because there's a book that I love, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And in the book it says, with every failure comes a seed for success. So
yeah,
I see any painting or anything that I do, it's something, something profound in that.
Have you ever finished a painting and like just like, okay, this is just for me. I'm not selling it. I'm not giving it away.
I have a couple pieces like that. Or yeah, I have a couple pieces like that. One of them hangs in my son's room above his bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's a really crazy story. It's really intense. It's about my grandfather. And my son's named after my grandfather. So,
okay.
I feel like it was a whole nother reason why I named him after my grandfather. It was because of the creation of that painting.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how do you, like, what makes a painting like, okay, this has to stay? Or do you, have you ever started a painting with the intention of this is, I'm keeping this? This is, no. It's always at the end where you realize something and you're like, I gotta keep that. That's weird. Cause like, that's like a weird like connection, communication between something that you created, you know, visually the art, where it speaks to you and like you, it tells you like, yeah, you can't let this go. That's so weird, dude. I mean, that's, does it happen a lot?
No. Especially as a full-time artist, I gotta let that shit go.
Like, oh, this means a lot, but I also need to pay the light bill and all this stuff. Like, sentimental, sure, but dollar bills, yeah, man.
I got bills.
Yeah, dude. That's rad, man. What do you got coming up? Like, what's future stuff you got?
Oh, dude, I got a lot of shit going on. So I'm going to be the featured artist for the Austin Home and Garden Show on the 23rd or on the 24th to the 26th.
Yeah.
And then I'm starting a mural on the west side with the Masa Collective and my boy Nomar, who curated this mural festival on the west side on the 30, I think it's like the 29th through the 31st. Well, I'm starting mine on the 27th because I have a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm going to Dallas on the 28th through the 29th to do some street art out there. And then coming back for a show on the 30th. I'm all over the place. I got a show here, a private opening on the 30th. And then I got a public group show opening and the Oak Cliff Culture Arts Center in Dallas on the 1st of April.
Oak Cliff?
Yeah, Oak Cliff. And
living the dream, man. That's fucking amazing. Yeah,
just doing a whole bunch of art stuff, man, and just staying busy. It was funny because the other day, yesterday, I was talking to my wife, and I was like, man, I got to do this. And she was like, well, which one are you going to choose? I was like, choose? Like,
yeah.
You know, I've been praying. I've been working my butt off, you know, since I started for, like, these kind of weeks, you know, like, so I was like, I'll be tired as hell, but I'm gonna get to every single one of them.
Yeah, dude, we'll wrap up with this. Anything else you want to share before I ask the last question?
No, or just follow you, whatever it is that you're doing, any field that you're pursuing, any dream that you're pursuing, just know that it takes longevity, determination, and sacrifice. And if you're not willing to do any of those three, just go find something else to do until you're able to
Get
to those.
Yeah, for sure. What was the one moment or moments, time, anything, where you knew I am on the right path? I am doing exactly, this is the real thing.
One of the first moments was when I helped raise like over 10 grand for breast cancer. And, you know, like a year and a half before that, you know, I was struggling, you know, I was on the streets, you know, doing this and that, trying to sell my work for whatever I could get. And just like a year and a half later, you know, my work was helping people who needed the help, you know, financially, through my work, you know, and being able to give back in that way for me was a big symbol of like what I am doing has value, what I'm doing is helping people, and what I'm doing is providing like some positive energy for people who are looking for it or need it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, like all the stuff that I've been wanting to do with myself, my soul, my energy, my entire life, like was being fulfilled through my art.
Yeah, dude.
And that for me was like a big moment where it's like, yeah, like this, I'm doing the right thing.
Dude, that's rad, man. Thank you for coming in, dude. This was fun. I enjoyed this. I had a good time. Yeah, man. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, dude. Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Laters.